support. So one of the principles of Taoism is it's very naturalistic in living in accord with nature. But in terms of it, but it's also work on politics and government. And the way of government is a way of least affecting people and people's lives. There's a passage in Tao Te Ching that goes, a good government is like frying a small fish. That what it means is that a small fish, if you're when you're frying it, if you flip it over too many times, it'll just fall apart. Basically, you put the fish in, you fry it on one side, you flip it over, and then put it on a plate, and it's done. Flipping it around is just going to break it up, and you lose your fish.
Is there an example in the world today of a government based on Taoist principles that you're describing?
No, not in today's world that I can think of. But it's a way of trusting in the intelligence of people in the universe and to look after itself and to leave the intelligence. Basically, you don't have to tell an apple tree how to produce apples. It just produces apples. You don't have to tell your heart how to beat. It just does it. But all these things that we naturally do, grow hair, grow our fingernails, digest our food, pump our, you know, turn that food into energy, beat the heart, the blood, and all that, that does it of its own accord. We don't need somebody there like a director telling us, digest this food, or do this or do that. So it's taking two cents of attention, sort of focus that we have, and broader intelligence in terms of like floodlights and spotlights, I suppose. It's we focus on the spotlight about our own particular conceptual understanding without recognizing that there's a background floodlight that is sort of directing the other things. Trust in those things, and the rest will take care of itself.
So from a political standpoint, he almost sounds like a proto-libertarian or something like that.
Perhaps. In the sense that little government is better government, yeah.
And the sort of trust in individuals to handle their own business and whatnot.
That's right. Yeah. That we trust in. So there's ideas that come out of the Tao's literature and the Tao Te Ching that we create thieves by having things of value. So, you know, if you have things of value that other people don't have, then we'll have thieves because they'll want, you know, those things.
So are you claiming that there's a problem with private property, according to the Taoist philosophy of government, of society?
It's not a problem of private property, but it may be a problem of our attachment to private property.
Could those be an argument for a socialist tendency of equal distribution, where if everyone has the same amount of things, there will be no need for thieves? There's an equilibrium between things?
Perhaps, but on the other hand, it wouldn't be. I'm not exactly sure what you mean by socialist, but it wouldn't be to restrict those of ability to accomplish what their abilities allow them to accomplish.
And what if I'm a great thief and I'm really good at either a common thief where I steal other people's stuff, or what if I'm a corporate thief that, I hoard but on the other hand, you're saying that government really should be minimal. So would there be a legitimate role of government to maybe redistribute wealth or put restrictions on people that are hoarding or unfairly or unethically acquiring more property for themselves?
I think it's a question of authenticity. I mean, if you're a great thief, I mean, perhaps those abilities could be used elsewhere. But if you're, there was a movie with Nicolas Cage where he's running guns. I can't remember the name of the movie, but
anyway. Lord of War, I think.
Yeah, that's it. Thank you. And at the end of the movie, I mean, he says, that he realizes that this is his niche in the universe, that he's just great at being a gun runner or whatever he does. And And, you know, that's being authentic. Well, there's something very Taoist about that, because it's being true to one's nature. If you're, you know, and, you know, we may impose ethical judgments on that, but that's, he's being true to his nature.
What would a legal system look like, a criminal justice system look like in the hypothetical? But I think you're saying, in principle, possible. State, political state based on Tao and Taoism, what would it look like?
What, the legal system?
Crime and punishment. Well, how would it be different than modern Western societies?
Well, there's a passage in there's a passage in the Tao Te Ching that goes something like about how does it go now? Something about neglecting the mind, but taking care of the stomach. Something is, I can't remember the exact words, but what the passage refers to metaphorically is that, you know, is that we can think up problems and, you know, and conceptualize, you know, the difficulties and so on, but to be concerned with the stomach is to be concerned with, that's something that is very true. When you feel hungry, you feel hungry. I mean, what can be more true than that? That's the truth. You feel hungry. You can't deny that. And so eat when you feel hungry. And as opposed to, you know, thinking up problems, you know, that I should have, you know, that I should eat A, B, or C, because whatever the case is. But it's responding to one's natural tendencies. Again, it's back to authenticity. Not so the conceptual world is somewhat is not to be disregarded, but it's to be understood in the context that it is superimposed on reality, and we understand reality in terms of concepts, but that's not reality in and of itself.
So on the eating topic, if I haven't eaten in 6 hours and I'm feeling hungry and I go eat, am I eating because I feel hungry, or am I eating because I haven't eaten in 6 hours? What's the cause of my eating?
Well, the cause of your eating is the feeling of hunger.
Okay.
So you just don't eat because you think that you'll be, because you want something. You eat because you're hungry, because that's authentic.
No, when you talk about hungry, is that a physical state, or is it a mental state?
I mean, I guess that's a difficult question, because I think we psychologically feel hunger when we, you know, you see a cake or something like that, you might feel hungry because of it. But the actual physical feeling that when your body tells you that it's time to put more, it's like driving your car and the meter on the arrow tells you that your tank is empty. Well, you pull over to a gas station and you fill it in and you fill up. Well, your stomach is telling you that the tank is empty, and so you fill it up.
So what does Taoism say about the mind-body problem?
There isn't one, because the mind-body problem is something that's conceptual. It's something, so we invent the idea of mind and we invent the idea of body, and we have them separate when they're just a single event. Well, you take the idea that there's a, you know, that we have a thinker that thinks thoughts. Well, there's a thinker that thinks thoughts from our perspective, but what is the thinker doing when it thinks of itself as a thinker? It's just another thought. So where's the separation between thinker and thoughts? A thinker is simply thoughts. The idea of the thinker is just another thought.
But how can one escape the problem? If I'm thinking thoughts, and I ask you, are my thoughts physical or are they immaterial? I mean, isn't that a legitimate question? How can we escape the question?
Whether they're material?
Are my thoughts identical to my brain, or are my thoughts some immaterial? Dualism or materialism? I mean, it seems like that's a real question. How can we escape that question?
From a Taoist perspective?
Right.
Well, there are thoughts. And it doesn't, I mean, you're falling back into conceptualizing it as being either material or not, whatever. There isn't. There's just simply thoughts. Stay there.
Okay, so the Western philosophy then makes the mistake of trying to identify what they are and asking questions that don't need to be asked. According to Taoism, there's no need to ask those questions.
These are questions that lie outside of language. It's like the idea of where I began with the idea of the Tao. The Tao is something that cannot be put into words. The moment that you try to put it into words, then it's not the eternal Tao, as one of the translations go. So language creates problems by virtue of the fact that it's language, because of the nature of language, I should say.
Because it's limited in its ability to describe or characterize or encompass, captivate reality.
That's right. So, I mean, for example, one would ask, okay, a question might be, does the Tao exist? Well, that's a nonsense question because existence is limited to the concepts of language. Here is something, it's the idea that this is something that's outside of language. Wittgenstein makes this point in the Tractatus as well, and he ends the Tractatus by saying that, you know, that cannot be put into words, must be passed over in silence. But in the Tractatus, Wittgenstein is setting the limits of language, what language can and cannot do. And there are things that lie outside of language, ethics, aesthetics, God, and the meaning of life. And these kinds of things lie outside of our conceptualization.
So Taoism challenges some of the very premises of Eurocentric philosophy.
Yeah, in the sense that, I mean, our conceptual understanding is back to my metaphors of the river. I mean, if you want to swim up the river against the current, well, go ahead. There's nothing wrong with that, but you don't have to. They aren't problems in a realistic sense.
Do we see any similarities between Taoism and, let's say, some of what we know about some of the indigenous cultures and religions, say, in North America? Like, I'm thinking specifically of the we've been learning about recently, the Anishinaabe culture in the Great Lakes region, which views the earth in a very integrated way. In other words, even rocks are part of a living earth. Whereas, you know, Eurocentric philosophy views rocks as sort of dead things. So that particular culture, and I know others, view the earth as one living organism with various components as opposed to disjointed and separate living versus dead components. Does that speak in any way to what you're saying? Is there any Taoist view about the earth?
Well, not in specific terms as you put it, but yes, I would say it's rather similar in the sense that, I mean, if you came to the earth, you know, if a spacecraft passed the earth, say, you know, 3.5 billion years ago, there would just, you know, the passengers on the spacecraft would look down the earth and say, you know, there's a bunch of rock that's molten and so on, and that's not very interesting. Come back, you know, 3.5 billion years later, oh, guess what? There's life. There was actually life in the rocks. In sense, it's not that the sense that the rocks are alive, but that's what the earth did. The same way that, you know, cherry trees cherry, the earth is, you know, you get water in a certain, you know, and then certain conditions, and that's what happens. Mm-hmm. So it's all interconnected.
And where could one go right now in today's current world? Where could one go to immerse oneself in this?
Taoism?
Yeah, and Taoism. You say there's no political state government based on Taoism, but are there pockets or are there subcultures? Are there places in the world where one could go and totally immerse oneself?
Yeah. The present moment. Your existence. Here and now.
So you don't need to go anywhere geographically?
No. It's the quality of one's life. It's about putting one's life into a broader perspective in terms of seeing oneself in terms of relationship to, you know, things that lie outside oneself, but seeing how they are necessary.
And are there teachers?
Taoist teachers.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's the Tao Te Ching, mm-hmm. but yourself is probably the best teacher. Just look inside yourself, and without the conceptual framework that, you know, that it's this political, this philosophical theory or that, or this religious idea or that religious idea, but just simply observe yourself and your relationship to things.
So you're
being present.
Right, right. So you're a professor at a mostly Western university, which teaches mostly quite different philosophies than Taoist philosophies. Uh-huh. Eurocentric Western philosophy. How do you reconcile your, what it sounds like is perhaps a preference for Taoist philosophy? How do you reconcile that with the classes you teach, which are about Western philosophy?
Well, I think that these ideas are found throughout Western philosophy. I don't think one has to go to the East to find these ideas. Same with Buddhism and Hinduism, and so on. Central ideas are found within our own tradition. Spinoza, Wittgenstein, Nietzsche, Kierkegaard, the Stoic philosophers, Epictetus, the skeptics, and Sextus Empiricus, and so on. I think that those traditions are very much alive in our own culture. And personally, I found that. I mean, I was interested in these questions as a student, and I naturally gravitated towards Eastern philosophy because it seemed to address some of the central issues that mattered to me at the time. But then as I began to understand them from the Eastern perspective and came back to the Western perspective, I thought that I came to realize that I didn't have to step outside my own culture. But it was a way of getting a perspective on it for myself, but it's not necessary, no. I mean, Kant, we find in Kant, like the Critique of Pure Reason, lends, understanding that reason can only take us so far. Similar to the limits of language.
Right. I was wondering, as you were talking about how our language and our concepts can't really fully encompass or describe reality, whether that there's some similarity or some parallel to who of course, asserts that we have no way to access noumenon.
Yeah, we only understand reality in terms of our conceptual framework. That's not to say that the conceptual framework is inadequate. It's just the way that we understand reality. It's plastic can only do things that plastic can do. And we're conceptual beings, and so we conceptualize reality. But we get this idea from the skeptics and Sextus Empiricus and so on, that, you know, just because we have different ways of seeing the world doesn't negate one or put one over the other. We see in, you know, three-dimensional color. Prey animals see in black and white. It doesn't mean that the prey animals are lacking color. By seeing in black and white, they perceive things that we don't perceive from their perspective. So it's a question of that one perspective is not superior or inferior to another perspective. They're just different. And our conceptual understanding is just the way that we do the world.
Do I remember correctly that in one of your lectures, actually it was a lecture about Kant, that according to Kant, science is not so much the study of what is, but it's the study of the way we think about what is.
Yeah, Kant shows that in his categories of understanding and the aesthetic that in saving science from Hume, that the best science can do is understand the way we understand the world, but not understand the world in and of itself. And I think we make that mistake in trying to understand the world in and of itself. We think in trying to understand the world in and of itself that we can somehow, that we are somehow the mind of God. We're not.
So we have to, as in Taoist philosophy, we have to accept our own limitations and we don't have access to certain things, certainly not through language and concepts.
But those limitations they aren't limitations in a negative sense. It's just simply the way things are. And that's, you know, it doesn't mean that we're lacking. It's just that it's not that there's one ultimate perspective. There's just perspectives.
Right. Well, very good. Thank you very much, Dr. Atkinson.
Well, thank you very much.
Okay. Well, that was Dr. James Atkinson, one of our professors at VIU, Vancouver Island University, pre-recorded a few weeks ago, and now we're back here live. Travis, what did you get from that? You've had a class with him on...
I did, yes.
Buddhism.
And Taoism and Confucianism. It was very interesting. It took a bit of trying to place myself in very different worlds than I usually find myself in. Very different concepts that I had to grapple with. Mm-hmm. The negative and positive space. The idea that really we should just immerse ourselves in the present moment and not really deal with everything else that we usually deal with.
Yeah, a few things stood out when I asked him, where in the world can I go to immerse myself in Taoist lifestyle, whatever I said.
Yeah, it was a very touristy question.
Touristy, yeah. Like, which airline should I take to get to the Taoist place? But anyway, his answer was...
The present moment.
The present moment.
Yeah, that's where you can really, truly find the Tao.
It's not about a geographical location.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's more within
yourself. You can't geolocate Taoism. It's a... State of mind? State of being?
State of being, yes.
Even a state of mind is too conceptual.
Mm-hmm. It's just...
Too adequately.
You could even say a state of being is too much. You could say a state of, or just a state.
Because that's a thought.
Yeah.
That's a thought. Mm-hmm. Also, here's a good quote from James. Plastic can only do things that plastic can do.
Mm-hmm. And humans can only do what humans can do.
And concepts can only do what concepts can do. So they're not necessarily... bad or...
They serve a certain function.
They serve a function, but only the function that they serve.
Yeah, and we shouldn't attribute more than just what the function is to it.
Right. So concepts, maybe the way that we... you know, we use concepts to function.
They're a tool.
But they're not things in themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well,
they don't describe... the world or the universe, or
they make an attempt at describing the universe in a way that we can understand it, but they do not have a one-to-one representation of what the universe actually is. It's just a picture, a photograph that it kind of blading color and certainly on the edges. That's really all we can see is a snapshot of reality at any given moment.
So does that mean that the several semesters I spent up late at night, up early on with coffee, studying nights and weekends to try and solve or at least understand the problem, the mind-body problem, were wasted? Because after all, as James said, plastic can only do what plastic can do, and the mind-body problem is only a conceptual problem. And it's not really a problem except to the extent that we get hung up on concepts.
In a way, yeah. Because even if we discover that the mind is purely mechanistic and our thoughts are to be found in the brain, at the end of the day, we're still going to be thinking thoughts and doing intentional, with air quotes, actions. While knowing that they were predetermined, but we'll still continue thinking after the fact.
Right, and the mind-body problem, which is to say the problem of whether the mind is physical or immaterial, that's just a thought.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is a thought.
Yeah.
So everything's a thought. So there's really not a problem. There's really not a separation between mind and body because they're all thoughts. It's sort of a type of a sort of a monistic idealism, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, sort of a claim that everything is simply a thought that makes everything immaterial, right?
In a way, we move through it's a material plane, but what we see of it is a thought, and our actions within that material plane are thoughts as well. All we ever see are our own thoughts projected in front of us.
Mm-hmm. What do you think, Catherine?
Oh, geez. When Travis said the word air quotes, I started thinking, is that a concept? Is that a thing? Oh, geez. That was 10 seconds ago. I'm no longer in the present moment.
Mm-hmm. It would be best just not to think backwards or forwards and just immerse ourselves in what is happening right now. Michael and I and Catherine just talking on the air. That's what's happening right now. There's nothing more to it.
Existence. We spent a lot of effort in philosophy trying to understand existence, right?
Mm-hmm. And our place in it.
And James said that going out of existence isn't the end. That's mind-boggling. If you come from a Western philosophy background, mm-hmm. how can not existing be something? That's not the end.
It's too much. It's beyond a concept. I don't think we can truly wrap our minds around it, what it actually means.
Mm-hmm.
We can take glimpses at it and use negative metaphysics to try and describe what it is not, but we'll never actually know what it means for what non-existent really means.
You have been listening to an archived edition of Spring Forward, the early name for the Canadian Philosophy Show. That was from April 27, 2017, and the special guest was Dr. James Atkinson, Professor of Philosophy and Religious Studies at Vancouver Island University. Thanks for listening to the Canadian Philosophy Show.
This is Bird Note. Sometimes you might come across a young songbird that's just left the nest. It's a fledgling, fully feathered, but with wings and tail still looking a bit stubby. Fluttering furiously on those short wings, it flies a short distance to the safety of a nearby bush. Like a toddler, it's unsteady, awkward, and learning the ropes. It may look like this young bird has left the nest too soon. In the case of the black-capped chickadee, just 16 days after hatching. But there's an adaptive advantage for nestlings to exit the nest as soon as they are able, even if they're not quite ready to fend for themselves. A nest full of begging young can be a target for a predator. Rather than risk the whole brood to a raccoon or snake, adults may feed the young, one stashed here, one there, in greater safety as they toddle from shrub to shrub. By about the 10th day after the young leave the nest, though, chickadee adults stop feeding them and may even turn aggressive, meaning it's time for the youngsters to disperse and feed themselves. At this point, they're fully fledged, should have their full set of flight feathers, and be ready to take to the skies. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein. Support for Bird Note is provided by Mary Piggott from Seattle, Washington, and generous listeners around the world.
This is Free Voices at CJSF 90.1, talking to you about
Eagle Nation Universal Production Society. We are 10 board of directors, and we are rejoicing for world history. Our show is based on true stories, musical and storytelling, and role-playing, silent crime, broken, very interesting series of show.
And a lot of in-depth oral tradition. We play every Thursday from 3 to 4. Come and join us.